As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hey everybody, thanks for listening to Football and Grits. I'm your host, David Ubben. If you like this show and you want to keep listening, you can find us in the Andy Staples and Friends pod feed. Go down to the show notes and you can click and make sure that you subscribe to that feed if you want to check us out moving forward. We will be there every Monday, myself, Andy Staples, and friends, as well as our other shows, One True Pod, Power Hour, all kinds of stuff there for college football listeners. Andy and Ari always going back and forth. So thanks for listening. We'll see you over there on the Andy Staples and Friends pod feed. Hello, listeners. We've been away, and we are back, and we have a new home here at Football and Grits, The Athletic's SEC football podcast. Every Monday, you can find myself, Andy Staples, and a host of SEC friends who you'll hear from talking SEC every Monday. So subscribe to the show. Subscribe to the Andy Staples feed. You can find it in the Football and Grits feed as well. But we'll be here every Monday. So subscribe, pencil that into your calendar, that we're going to be talking the ever-growing SEC, Andy, at 16 teams and counting, 14 for the time
being. The great expanding SEC.
It's a little bit like the blob that I feel like in Football and Grits in 2026. Well, not 130 teams, but maybe 120, something like that.
It's like in Demolition Man. Where you find out that now all restaurants are Taco Bell. Now all college football is SEC.
It's funny because it's true. But anyway, we'll be here talking about whoever's in the league. Clemson, looking at you. But anyway, thank you guys for tuning in. We're back, and we figured, Andy, why don't we start by looking at these divisions? And I've heard that there's one in the East that includes a team west of the Mississippi, but that's fine. That's fine. We'll just touch on that.
Also,
we're talking SEC
Vanderbilt
East
is west of Auburn. Just throwing that out there.
That's true. Fair enough. Listen, geography is just a suggestion. I've always said that, and I believe that that's a good life motto. But let's talk SEC, and I'm quoting East right now. Andy, that conversation can only start with one team, the Georgia Bulldogs. Always a bridesmaid, never a bride at this point.
But you know, the bridesmaid that everybody wants to dance with.
Sure, I don't disagree with you, but our good friend Seth Emerson has written multiple stories to this effect. It's time for Georgia. What do you feel about them finally finding the right one and getting that ring this year?
This is the path. If you're going to do it, this is your path. You've got a season opener against Clemson where you can kind of test yourself out against that kind of team. Mm-hmm. So you see what you look like against that kind of team. You don't even have to win the game. It doesn't matter if you win or not. This is all for just testing purposes. And then you get into the SEC where your main rival in the East has to play Alabama and LSU. You don't. You play Auburn right after a coaching change. You play Arkansas out of the West. That's a much better deal. You've got a quarterback who's not leaving. Mm-hmm. You know, this is right about the time. Actually, we were a little bit later last year when Jamie Newman decided to leave because they didn't start camps on time last year. But you didn't have spring practice. The guy you thought was going to be your starting quarterback left right as camp opened. Very different situation now. JT Daniels finished last season as the established starter. Todd Monken knows what he's got. They had a spring practice together. They had an entire offseason together. This is as excited as you should be about a Georgia offense in a long, long time.
Yeah.
And there's a lot to like about this Georgia offense. So you've got that. You've got a defense that has been good consistently over the last few years that brings a bunch of guys back. Dan Lanning's still there running the defense. This should be the year. And I realize Alabama is still a team in the SEC that you have to worry about. Mm-hmm. And let's not forget, Alabama's not the only good team in the West.
Mm-hmm.
Texas A&M is going to be really good.
Very good.
LSU, five, I think, is going to have a big bounce back. Mm-hmm. Yeah, LSU is going to have a big bounce back this year. So it's not like it's a cakewalk into the playoff for Georgia. They would have to earn their way there. But it's never going to get easier than this, and it's never going to be a situation where you're bringing back more than this, probably. So this is the year it should work.
I feel for the Georgia fans, but they're constructed so well right now. You mentioned the offensive side, but you got to be able to affect the passer and do so with four guys. And Georgia's going to be able to do that. You know, three, four guys, really. Starts with Jordan Davis up front. I mean, best defensive line in the country? Certainly in the SEC, probably. Yeah. And that's a good thing to have. If you're going to pick one unit on the defensive side of the ball that you want to be dominant, it has to be those guys. And Georgia has that. The pieces are there. And I think, you know, I understand the narrative with Georgia in that they've been hanging around. They've been national title caliber for the better part of the last, 4 years, and haven't been able to really have a lot of meaningful jewelry to go with that. But it's still, you're still facing that Alabama situation. And you know, the reality is that certainly there's a world in which, you know, you beat Clemson, you lose to Alabama, you still get in the playoff, and then you don't have to actually go through Alabama to win the title. But there are a lot more universes in which you have to beat Alabama. And I think, dare I say, it would be more satisfying to go through Alabama for Georgia.
Well, if you make the playoff because you beat Clemson and then lost to Alabama as a 12-0 team in the SEC championship game, you're still probably going to have to beat Alabama to win the national title.
Probably so. But you'd hope that maybe a Clemson or an Ohio State or an Oklahoma could knock them off. Maybe. Maybe.
Maybe. Maybe.
Maybe he's doing some heavy lifting there. But yes.
Well, before... Okay. I sense this. It might be because of where I live. I can hear it, though.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of people going, wait, 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 wait. You're just handing Georgia the East? Was there not a team that beat them last year? Didn't a different team win the East last year?
Mm-hmm.
We probably need to talk about that. Because we are just sort of...
We'll get to them.
...wandering over the Florida Gators.
Well, I believe I had to eat a bit of crow last year for arguing that to suggest that Georgia was not the favorite in the East and a heavy favorite was borderline blasphemous. Now... Injuries had a little bit to do with that. The quarterback exodus, part of that was Jamie Newman. I was a big Jamie Newman fan. I can't say that I believe that a Stetson Bennett-led Georgia team is going to be in the playoff. But JT Daniels, we saw those flashes. We saw – I'm a big Todd Monken advocate. I think he's can really take Georgia to the next level offensively. Maybe not to the level that Alabama is, but – to a much better level than what they were early in the Kirby Smart tenure. So I understand the Florida angst, Andy. Am I wrong for shrugging it off again? Rebooted offense. No Kyle Trask. No Kadarius Toney. You're missing so many guys. We saw kind of a look at you know, what this offense might look like. No Kyle Pitts, of course, as well, in the Cotton Bowl, little pieces of that. Not to say that that's an accurate reflection, but it's still a totally rebooted offense. And Florida won last year with offense, and the defense will be a little bit better this year, but they don't have a full unit. I like Kyir Elam, you know, Zach Carter, those pieces, but I just don't, I'm not buying the Florida stock this year. Good team, very good team, probably a 9-10 win team. I don't buy them as a team that can go wire to wire with Georgia over the course of a full SEC season.
I think their offense is going to be better than people realize. This gets back to an offense that's more similar to what Dan Mullen ran with his best Mississippi State teams, mm-hmm. where they had a quarterback who was a good running threat. But Emory Jones's arm is better than people
realize. I need to see more from him. I get it. He might surprise me, but I'm not in on it yet. I'm not in on it yet.
So their offense is actually not what I'm concerned about. It is the defense again. Mm-hmm. How much better can they be? Because if they're not much better, then you're asking that offense to do a lot. Because that was a great offense they had last year that was dragged down ultimately by the defense.
Yeah.
This offense, if you're asking that this offense to be at that level game after game after game, it's asking a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You need the defense to pick up a little more slack this year. So I think that's the issue. And the other part of it is the schedule. You know, Georgia had the harder schedule last year. Georgia had to go to Alabama. Florida's got to play Alabama and LSU this year. There's a universe where Florida could beat Georgia and still lose the East.
Yeah.
You know, that's entirely possible.
I think you're right.
I don't think it works out that way, but because of the way the schedule works out, it's possible.
So tell me, I mean, you made some Dak Prescott allusions there. I'm skeptical. Where's the ceiling and the floor for Emory Jones in your mind?
The ceiling is he could be... So he's got a better arm than Kyle Trask. Does that mean he's a better that he's as good a processor? The thing about Kyle Trask that made him so good in this offense was he put the ball where it needed to be. Mm-hmm. He made very decisive reads. He said, okay, I'm doing this. I'm getting the ball out.
Get it to the playmakers, of which there were many last year.
He wasn't pumping and then waiting and forcing his offensive line to block mm-hmm. longer than it needed to. He didn't do it. He got the ball out. So if Emory can get the ball out and feel as comfortable in the offense as Kyle Trask did, this is going to be a really good offense because Emory's a much bigger run threat. You have to respect the fact that he might take off with it. And so I don't think it's going to be as dramatic a drop-off. That's the ceiling. The floor would be he is not as effective, and they go with Anthony Richardson, who's another big guy with a big arm who can move really well. But you know, he's not been the guy who's been groomed for the last 3 years to take over this job.
You're not selling me. If his floor is the guy that everybody says is the guy is not the guy, if that's his floor, I'm out. I'm officially out.
We don't know yet. We haven't seen him yet.
I know. I just am not. I'm not in on Florida. I think Georgia might be super team this year.
Yeah, I think in the limited sample size we've seen that Emory Jones can be just fine.
But that's not what they need.
I think he will be just fine.
Just fine is not going to get it done.
Oh, they need him to be super. They need him to be Superman.
Yeah.
Yeah, I understand that. But listen, part of that is you've got to recruit some Supermen around him.
Yeah.
Like their roster physically does not match up with Georgia's roster. Part of the job of being a head coach in the SEC at a program that expects you to win SEC titles is you got to recruit like the other programs that expect to win SEC titles. And Georgia and Alabama and LSU and now Texas A&M recruit on a different level than the rest of the league.
Mm-hmm. And I think, too, with the Florida conversation, you know, last year I had Kyle Pitts, I think, third on my Heisman ballot. I thought he was as good as just about anybody in the SEC last year. And he that worries me, not for the production, but because without him, I'm worried that a lot of sixes are going to turn into threes with Florida. I think that
Kyle Pitts
was
an alien.
Yeah, that guy. Yeah.
Kyle Pitts was an absolute alien.
That guy, it's probably unfair to say he put them in the SEC title game, but it's not that far. I think that turning those threes into sixes is something that not that many guys can do, and I think they're going to miss
that. Don't forget there were two first-rounders in the offense.
Yes, that's true.
two first rounders going out for passes almost every play.
Yes.
So Tony was a different story because it took him a while to figure out how to work within the flow of the offense. But last year, that light finally came on. And instead of them having to force feed him touches, he was getting open within the flow of the offense mm-hmm. and finding, you know, running better routes. And so, yeah, that is going to be an issue. Who steps into that role? Who is that next person? You know, maybe it's Xavier Henderson. We'll see. But that the Kyle Pitts thing, you don't replace him.
Yeah.
It's just those guys don't come along but every so often.
I'm sad we did not coin the Tavon Toney nickname. I feel like we should have.
Well, it's funny because, you know, Tony would have been an ideal Urban Meyer mm-hmm. Gator. Like mm-hmm. And I think Urban Meyer wanted to draft him.
Maybe Percy Tony would have been a better nickname than Tavon Tony.
Well, no, I mean, trust me, there were lots of Percy comparisons the first time everybody saw Tony carry the ball mm-hmm. or touch the ball. He didn't have quite the same instincts as Percy. Percy mm-hmm. had a lot better football instincts, and that's why Percy immediately made an impact. And it took a while for Kadarius Tony to make an impact, but. Yeah, I laughed when the Jaguars signed Tavon Austin the other day because I'm like, this is just Urban Meyer making up for lost time.
I'm with you on that. So, Andy, as we talk about Florida's floor, there's the rest of the SEC. I think Georgia, talent-wise, is on a tier by themselves. But we saw last year, you know, things break a couple ways. Florida could catch them. It's plausible. But if somebody crashes that party and kicks Florida – or Georgia, I suppose, but more likely Florida, to that number three spot. In your mind, who is that most likely candidate?
Kentucky. It would be Kentucky because the offense is more dynamic, and by more dynamic, I mean better than the non-functional one they had last year.
Mm-hmm.
And they couldn't throw the ball at all last year. It was like you knew poor Chris Rodriguez was going to be running into these nine-man boxes because – and look, they had a good offensive line, so he's getting good blocking, but there's only so much you can do when they've got so many more guys ready to stop you. Mm-hmm. And there was no threat for Kentucky to throw the ball. This will be interesting. You bring in Lee and Cohen from the Rams, and you know, it's kind of the same philosophy as when LSU brings in Joe Brady. So Joe Brady knows Sean Payton's offense.
Yeah.
Can he re-engineer Sean Payton's offense for a college offense? And he did, and they won the national title. Now, Joe Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase, all those guys,
Clyde Edwards-Helaire,
that helps a lot. But can Liam Cohen re-engineer the Sean McVay offense for a college program?
Mm-hmm.
If he can, I mean, this could be really interesting. And so Audrey Snyder, our Penn State beat writer, was telling me about Will Levis, and Will Levis had to run the ball a lot last year when he got in, the few times he got in for Penn State when he was replacing Sean Clifford. But he's got a good arm.
I saw him last year, and I literally had texted Audrey multiple times during Penn State games asking, why do they not let this guy throw it? Every time he threw it, I was like, oh, okay. And then they're just using him in like third and one. Just,
yes, exactly. So it may be that they've got more with him than we realize, but the thing is they do have that really good offensive line,
mm-hmm.
and he's going to have time to throw. He's got Rodriguez, who's one of the better running backs in the league. Well, actually one of the best running backs in the country. Wandale Robinson comes in. Wandale Robinson was Nebraska's most explosive player, and I realized Nebraska wasn't great offensively, but he was one of those you feel like if you put a lot of talent around him, he could be really special.
He had more than a few highlights where you're like, this guy's got something.
Exactly. So now he's going to be playing in an offense where there's a very good offensive line, maybe a quarterback who can get him a ball and get him the ball, a scheme that may be a little more have a few more answers for the defenses mm-hmm. that they're going to see. I feel like as competitive as they were with an offense that was, I'm not kidding when I say non-functional. They couldn't do anything offensively. So you get the offense to adequate, you got a pretty good team. But if the offense is above average, then all of a sudden, you've got a team.
You don't want to play Kentucky.
I don't think they can beat Georgia or win the East necessarily. But they can be the team that nobody wants to play. And I think the game where we're going to get to see how that all works and where the pecking order might shake out is September 11th. That's Missouri at Kentucky. Mm-hmm. So Missouri feels like kind of – Missouri and Kentucky feel like they're kind of pretty close. And whoever wins that game then has the advantage and then can make its play on the top of the standings. Mm-hmm.
I'm with you on the Kentucky. I want to buy all the Kentucky stock that I possibly can at the moment. The Sean McVay coaching sapling is very interesting, and listen, we'll see how it goes. Some guys are going to be great. Some guys are not. I mean, the coaching tree concept, I think, is fundamentally flawed in college sports. I feel like everybody wants to put all their chips in that bag. I mean, they've been mining the Nick Saban coaching tree for 10, 15 years with, let's say mixed results. Is that fair? How would you describe?
You speak like someone who covered Tennessee under Jeremy.
No,
Pruitt.
That doesn't sound right.
And might have heard a few things about.
Was he a Nick
Saban
coach?
Dooley era at the same time.
He might have been. He might have been. But yeah, like
worked with him a couple years.
Yeah, maybe one or two. But so it's a grab bag. It might work. It might not. I think the thing where the coaching tree stuff gets really confusing is nobody seems to be able to suss out how much, what percentage contribution things are when they're with the wunderkind coach. You know, if you're
or
with,
how much they're actually listening.
Yes.
How much is the because Joe Brady clearly was paying attention mm-hmm. to Sean Payton. Mm-hmm.
You could see it all over their offense.
Jeremy Pruitt clearly wasn't paying attention to Nick Saban, because what is Nick Saban's best attribute?
His
adaptability.
Mm-hmm.
What did Jeremy Pruitt do? Tried to create 2012 Alabama with worse players.
Yeah, it didn't work for those of you guys who didn't pay attention to Tennessee. And then, of course, with what, 1985 recruiting tactics? 1985 Southwest Conference recruiting tactics? All that was missing was the gold Camaro. That's all we needed. But yeah, I think it's. I'm with you on in Kentucky though. Will the defense be as good as it was last year? I think some people are glossing over that. But if they aren't, I mean, the bar is on the floor for them offensively, and it's hard for me.
We're so bad.
It's hard for me to believe that it can't be significantly better, even if it's not, very very good. And I wouldn't take off the table the idea that this offense could be very, very good. New offensive coordinator, new quarterback, good offensive line, new weapons. It could just overnight.
I'll stop you there. Good offensive line.
Mm-hmm.
At least three NFL offensive linemen, maybe more. That's the thing that people don't get. Teams that have 3 to 5 NFL offensive linemen have a completely different ceiling than everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
You can do so much more. And there just aren't that many teams like that anymore.
There aren't.
The best programs hog them all. Like, you look at Alabama's offensive line, the guys that they bring in as backups, they're going to play in the NFL too for the most part once they wait out the guys in front of them. A lot of these other programs, they might have one guy who's going to play in the NFL, but Kentucky will start at least three and possibly more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that makes a huge difference.
Yeah. I think we got to talk about the other team on that early season access in the SEC East, and that is Missouri. I am not a big believer in Missouri's ceiling, but I'm a big believer in their floor being pretty high. Last year, Eli Drinkwitz probably inherited. I mean, last year, was there ever a tougher year for first-year coaches in the history of this sport? I'm not sure that there was.
No, and that's what I think is so interesting about the coaches in the SEC. The first-year coaches all did pretty well.
Yeah, they did.
When you consider
Pittman especially.
How tough things were for them. Yeah. So, and I thought Drinkwitz did a fantastic mm-hmm. job. I thought once they decided that Connor Bazelak was their quarterback, that everything changed for them. It was basically like halftime of the Tennessee
game. Yeah, I was obviously at that Tennessee-Missouri game, and seeing that Missouri team, which just got bullied for pretty much 60 minutes, and seeing the Missouri team that closed the season that was really threatening, and that was a completely different team. And if you can find that quarterback, and obviously in Connor Bazelak they have that, you can't overstate how much that changes, and just for the tenor of a program, for how everything looks, for trying to build a program, you can see the sort of scaffolding start to go up, and it's around Connor Bazelak right now, and Eli Drinkwitz trying to get it going at Missouri. I again, not only this year, but just big picture, I'm skeptical of how high that ceiling can get when you're sharing a division with Georgia and Florida. But, you know, they can still get to that point where they're consistently the third best program in the SEC East. I think in terms of where they're at and their consistency, they've kind of been that for a good amount of time, and they might get to that point and stay there under Eli Drinkwitz, and you know, in a good year, might ascend to that two spot or steal an East title at some point, and we'll see. But year two is really going to tell us a lot about the Drinkwitz era at Mizzou.
Yeah, and Steve Wilks coming in as a defensive coordinator, I think it'll be interesting to see how he transitions in from the NFL. But, you know, they needed to get better on that side of the ball. Mm-hmm. And if they can, I mean, yeah, this is a team that can be that third best team in the SEC East. But, again, I have a hard time putting them over Kentucky, because I actually would put Kentucky closer to where Florida is, and I'm very interested to see what that Kentucky-Florida game in Lexington looks like as well. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, moving down the line, another first-year first-year coach in the SEC. Or the SEC East, there's a couple of them, or three of them, really. Tennessee, Josh Heupel. They're going to score some points. You know, we've heard a lot about the fun there, but man, the bodies just are not there. They are going to be razor thin everywhere. And
except at quarterback, where they have 47 different
people. This is true. Yes. I would plunk my money down on the Joe Milton Express on that competition there, but, they just, you know, they have some speed, they have some guys, but they just, the bodies are not going to be there, especially on defense. I think their ceiling this year is pretty low. They seem like a 4-6 win team to me, and, you know, can they threaten some people with that offense? Maybe. I think they are going to score. That offense is going to be effective. They have the pieces to run it, but defensively, they're going to probably be on the short list of teams that are giving up as many points and yards per play as anybody in the league, from where I see it.
But here's the thing. Look, we know this about Tennessee. Everything that happened last year, the NCAA stuff, firing Jeremy Pruitt, all this, we know that that's going to happen. We know it's going to be a tough year for Tennessee. Last year was a tough year for Tennessee.
They seem to be coming in droves lately, but yeah.
Well, here's my thing, though. I think everybody can accept that it's going to be difficult, that there's a long road ahead. Will that be easier to accept if it's at least a fun offense to watch?
More so than the alternative, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They again, and you know how I feel about Tennessee fans. I think they're the most loyal, most passionate fans in the universe. And they have been kicked in the teeth over and over again by their
fans. Fortunately, I'm not sure Iowa State fans are listening to this, but it's close.
They are. Well, they're very, very passionate. Yes. But Tennessee fans get. I mean, I just think it's one thing to give them a bad team, but then give them a bad team that's just a snooze fest to watch is doubly insulting. And that's what they've had to deal with.
Yes, and that's at least they'll shift there. I think they will be fun. I think. And they will put up some points.
That's how you bring it back.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you bring the program back, is you make it fun. Like, Arkansas is a good example last year. Arkansas wasn't a great team by any stretch, but you watch them play. They're playing hard. They seem to be enjoying themselves. They play a fun brand of football. And you're like, okay, I can see where a good player might say, you know what? I want to be a part of that. I want to be a part of them getting better and becoming a winning program again. And that's what, if Tennessee is fun to watch and looks like it's fun to play for, then they will get players who want to come in and help them get back to being a winning program.
Yeah, and I think too, you know, Arkansas is a good example, like the jukebox gimmick. Like,
that's right.
Tennessee could have something like that, because every win outside of Vanderbilt and most of their non-conference, every win's going to be meaningful. If you beat Pitt, that's huge. If you beat Kentucky, Missouri, South Carolina, those are going to feel really good and like you really did something. And because obviously, and I think fans, you know, if there ever was a year zero, for those who don't believe in it, certainly Josh Heupel would have one if there ever was one. And I think it has helped him that, you know, his hiring, I don't think anybody would call it a home run or that they're going to throw parades. I think that helps him because nobody's walking in. It's not like a Harbaugh situation where if you're not winning the SEC in year two, people are going to be going nuts. I think that helps him that people are just kind of in wait-and-see mode. They've heard all the sales pitches for over and over again. They've been disappointed over and over again. And everybody around Tennessee, you know, nobody's knocking on Josh Heupel's door dropping off cookies every morning. They're waiting and seeing and hoping. And I think that works for them. And like I said, everything they do this year outside of, you know, their outside of the Pitt non-conference game and probably Vandy, everything that they do is going to feel like a step in the right direction, barring a Georgia State disaster, in which case just, I don't recommend that.
Just be fun.
Yeah.
Just be well. And South Alabama.
Careful.
That's the
careful
one.
Careful.
Didn't Jake Bentley has beaten them three times.
Right? I believe that's accurate. Yes.
Yeah. That's kind of scary.
It should be. But I think with this offense, you can
94th year senior coming with three wins against you already.
Yeah, but I think with this offense, I think this is an offense that when you have better athletes, you can really flex. And Tennessee has not had that offense for a while. So I agree with you, but we'll see. I think, and just to put a bow on the quarterback situation, whoever wins, I think will be fine. In this offense, I'm not worried about that. Like, there's some guys that can have a higher ceiling and do some things, but the offense will be fine, whoever wins the quarterback competition. Moving down the line.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Wait. I want to go back to the quarterback competition because you said you're banking on Joe Milton, mm-hmm. and I think folks who have not followed Tennessee that closely are going to have questions about that because he's the one who got there the most recently. Mm-hmm. And Harrison Bailey and Brian Moore are still there from the previous administration. Meanwhile, Hendon Hooker came as a grad transfer from Virginia Tech, probably thinking, I'm gonna win this job. So
before the firing,
what is it
though,
that makes you think Joe Milton, who was not there for the spring and who left Michigan, who, you know, it looked like it was going to be Cade McNamara and they were bringing in Alan Bowman. You know, Joe Milton going to Tennessee, what makes you think he's the one that winds up being the starter?
Couple things. One, I think he gives them a higher ceiling. I think he's the most talented guy on the roster, and you're starting from nothing. So chase your potential, and I think he gives them that more than anyone else on the roster. Two, the fact that they had seen these guys, what they had. They saw them in spring. They saw them in workouts. They studied them, and they still said, Joe Milton, come on down. And there's something to be said for bringing in as much talent as you can. But considering how precious scholarships are, and they already had three scholarship quarterbacks, if you didn't, you know, I don't. They've treated everybody fairly, but I think if you truth serum the staff and you could ask them who they would want to win that job, I think they would almost all universally say Joe Milton. And the arm strength and the mobility and just the big body, he's just the type of guy that is just a little different than everybody else they have on the roster. And so that's kind of where I'm at. If it's close, I think you got to go with Milton because he gives you that next level and that higher ceiling. And all these guys have time. But, you know, I generally, not to say that what I think he did at Michigan was irrelevant, but I think what he did at Michigan is a lot like what all these quarterbacks did in Tennessee's previous offense, in that I've said multiple times, I think if you put Pat Mahomes in Tennessee's offense last year, he throws for 2,500 yards and 16 touchdowns and 8 picks. Like, I think that's where they're at. And in this new offense, that is not what the numbers are going to be. And I think if you can invest in him, he can take you to some next levels offensively. So that's my case for Joe Milton.
All right. So now we need to go to another East school with a first-year head coach.
Beamer ball.
Probably is about the same level as Tennessee.
Yeah.
And, you know, we talk about Kentucky and Missouri kind of being an inflection point when – it feels like Tennessee, South Carolina is an inflection point.
A little bit. Tennessee has a better roster. They're probably, I mean, I guess you could make an argument on depth or whatever, but if you're starting 22, I think Tennessee has more talent. But South Carolina has been a problem for Tennessee, and Tennessee's had more talent than South Carolina pretty often, and they still manage to lose. And I think there's something to be said for, you know, certainly Shane Beamer is not recruiting against the same uphill battle that Tennessee is with the NCAA stuff. But clearly, the recruiting sales pitch that he has had is working. And if that's working on the recruiting trail, you wonder how well it's working in his own building. You'd seem to think that it would be pretty well, working pretty well. And we'll see. I mean, they're just going to be such a mystery, I think, in terms of what this program looks like and what they can do. And it's pretty close to a year zero, probably not to the same level that Tennessee is. But what do you make of the Gamecocks in year one under Shane Beamer?
I really don't know what to expect from them. This is an interesting one because they've done a lot in the transfer portal. Mm-hmm. And I feel like if they've chosen wisely in the transfer portal, it gives them a head start on the rebuild. But we'll see how it works. Did you know, David, that South Carolina has one of the people who tied for the lead in the nation in sacks last year?
I don't think I knew that.
In all of FBS. Yes, Jordan Strawn, who is at Georgia State. He was a walk-on at Georgia State. Started out, you know, he kept gaining weight, kind of turned into a hybrid edge rusher, and wound up, yeah, tying for the lead in the nation in sacks last year. And so now he's going to try his hand at doing it in the SEC. That's one of those things. If that works out, that changes the face of their defense.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I am a big believer in Kevin Harris, and we'll see what he can offer them.
Yeah, they're going to be able to run the
ball. Yeah, I think that's probably accurate.
Luke Doty's got to figure that out. The one other name I'd give you for South Carolina that I think is interesting, and I don't know what he's going to turn out to be because he's jumping up a big, not just group of five to power five. This guy's jumping from Division II to power five to the SEC, is EJ Jenkins, who's a receiver who was at St. Francis in Pennsylvania. He's 6'7", 245. He can move. He actually came with his quarterback. I don't know. His quarterback is probably going to be the backup to Luke Doty. Mm-hmm. But EJ Jenkins is a guy that during the spring, they were pretty impressed with him. And, you know, from a matchup standpoint, there's a lot of good corners in the SEC, but 6'7", 245 is pretty hard to match up with.
I do think so. And I think the X factor for South Carolina, strength coach Luke Day is a Football and Grits listener. And I think when you have that kind of sharp mind and that kind of taste in your locker room, that can only help you, I think.
Oh, absolutely. Do we have a percentage on what, you know, how many SEC strength coaches are Football and Grits? Is he the only one?
Because let us know. Listen, let us know.
We're going to change everything, and we're going to put South Carolina at number one, and we'll start from there.
Football and Grits down. And strength coaches, the new name of the
Scott
pod.
Sinclair. I need to know if you're listening to us or not.
Well, let's hear it. Reach out to us.
Georgia's position at number one, and our predictions hinges upon it.
It does. Andy, what can you tell us? Give me something good about Vanderbilt. I watched them play last year.
They just Anchor debuted down. Their new uniforms, and they look really sweet.
What describe the uniforms for our listeners. I have not seen these today, I must
admit. They got the nice block V. It might look a little like Valparaiso, but
I'm looking these up as
I'm telling you, it's an impressive-looking block V. Gold pants on the away uniforms that look really sweet. The gold helmet, white jersey, gold pants is a great look. It's a very classic.
I'm looking at these
classy
right
look that Vandy is going to
I feel
come
the
out
classic, but am I the only person on the world who liked the chain, the anchor chain? Is it just me?
You were the only person.
I like it. I'm sorry. I love the chain, and it's gone, and I am disappointed. Bring back the chain, Vandy, please. Please.
So little bit of a New Orleans Saints in the 80s look to this. Which, you know, that's not a good time in Saints history either. But yeah.
Yeah.
Clark Lee inherits a team that didn't do very well last year, that the roster is in need of a rebuild. Barton Simmons, who came from our world, mm-hmm. is now in charge of doing
certainly
that.
The most interesting personnel move of the offseason, I would say.
Absolutely. Now, Ken Seals, I thought, did a good job.
Yeah, that's a bright spot. I don't know that he's your guy, but he did enough to tell me that he can play in the SEC.
to throw over 60%, you complete over 60% of your passes on a team where you were at a talent deficit every single time you set foot on the field.
Yeah.
In an all
and not only that, but especially late in the season with their COVID situation, they were playing with 40, 50, 60 guys a lot of the time.
I think he did a really good job last year. So I'm kind of excited to see what he turns into, because it won't be as hard as it was last year for him.
Can't be.
So he could be quite a bit better. So I'm not completely dismissing Vandy. I think, you know, Clark Lee understands what he's getting himself into. He played there. Mm-hmm. He knows what to sell, and he knows what they need to do to be a respectable football program. And it's really about getting the players in there who want to. And I think James Franklin kind of encapsulated how to sell Vandy the best. It's look at this education you're going to get. You're playing in the SEC, and you're in the
Nashville,
one of the best towns in America.
Yeah.
And he sold it really well.
And they're paying for your housing Clark Lee can in sell Nashville. That.
Correct, which is a big yes. thing now. But it, maybe not as much when Franklin got there, yeah. but definitely right now. Mm-hmm. I think Clark Lee can sell that really well, but it's going to take him a couple years. But to have a guy at quarterback who and really conceals as a freshman again if he wants mm-hmm. to be, that's up to him. But you could have that guy for four more years if you want.
Do you think it's important at a place like Vandy that has so many challenges to have someone in Clark Lee who understands those challenges and knows what resonates with people in terms of selling Vanderbilt football?
Well, as you saw with Franklin, you didn't have to go there. It's just it just needs to be somebody who understands it
mm-hmm.
and who knows how to package it properly. And I think Franklin gave you a good template for it, and then you got Clark Lee, who understands all of the nuance of it as someone who grew up in the town, who played there, and just has seen it from the inside out. So yeah, I think they've got the right people in place. Now they've just got to land the players, mm-hmm. and it's never easy. But I do think, I talked to Ari about this a lot. I think recruits are changing in terms of what they want. They still want the same thing. Can you get me to the NFL? But the thing is, the SEC, every school in the SEC is going to be scouted. If you are good in the SEC, you are going to play in the NFL. So when you get beyond the group that says, I want to go to the place that makes the most first-rounders, which is those are the people that go to Alabama mm-hmm. and Ohio State, Clemson, Georgia, LSU. When you get beyond them, they're looking at, can you get me to the NFL? But I do think there's more people going, what kind of degree do I have when I get out?
Mm-hmm.
And that's where a school like Vandy can take advantage. They can sell that hard. And I think there are more elite recruits who are thinking more about that. And you're not going to get them all. They're still going to, for the most part, go to more traditional football powers. Or if they're in that pool, they may choose Notre Dame over you. They may choose Stanford over you. They made, you know, Northwestern has had more recent success. But you can sell it and you can say, look, you know, the Alabamas, maybe they didn't recruit you. Georgia didn't recruit you. Why don't you go show them that they should have recruited you and get this degree at the same time?
Mm-hmm.
There's a way to pitch that where you're going to get a few of those guys. And if you do, then things get interesting if you're Vandy.
Yeah, I'd say that's about right. Well, the East is going to be interesting. A two-horse race for the most part, but that second group is going to be interesting. And then Vandy, we'll see. Tennessee, you know, what does Josh Heupel have to bring? What is Beamer Ball? What is that, Beamer Ball South, or would that be Beamer Ball East, we're calling that?
I think it would be South. It's more, it's like due South.
It's, you could say Beamer Ball Southeast, I guess, since you're going from the ACC to the SEC, from Beamer Ball specifically.
Well, the most of the ACC is east of the SEC, so.
Fair enough. But we'll see how it shakes out. Andy, before we go, it's been a while since we've had an episode of Football and Grits, and as such, we need to make do on the latter half of our name. Since the last time we recorded.
I need to tell people how to actually eat grits?
No, not the grits specifically. But since the last time we had an episode of Football and Grits, what is the meal that you has left you the most satisfied recently?
That's hard to say, David, because I've not gotten to travel very much. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this situation, where everything is and not being able to talk to folks in person, there have not been a ton of opportunities for that. I've been in Jacksonville a few times doing some Jag stuff. There's a place there called the Bearded Pig.
I have been. I went when Tennessee went to the Gator Bowl. Fantastic barbecue.
It's excellent. It is excellent. And so you get the pulled pork poutine as your appetizer, which is
I have not had that.
The fries.
Now I'm intrigued.
Covered in sausage gravy with pulled pork, and it's spectacular. And then a beef rib.
Mm.
And there are not many places in Florida where you're going to find a good beef. This is a beef rib.
Even in Dallas, there's only a few places that do that.
Yeah, this would stack up with the good places in Texas. Mm-hmm. And so that was pretty spectacular, you know, getting to cover a little Jags draft and eat a giant beef rib with some, with some pulled pork poutine on the side.
Yes.
That was pretty awesome.
I will leave you with two, Andy. I've done a decent bit of traveling this summer. The two meals that I think about, among the best that I've had. Do we want to start with the traditional or the exotic?
Let's go traditional first.
All right. So this weekend, I was driving back to the state of Tennessee, where I lay my head. And I had not had Bogart's ribs in a good 10, 15 years almost. I had them once in college. I'm just not in St. Louis that often.
This is in St. Louis, right?
Yes, I'm not in St. Louis that often. But man, they have a little apricot glaze on there. I'm not a ribs guy, and this is one of the best barbecue meals I have had, maybe ever. It's up
there. I am a ribs guy. I have not been there yet. I have been taunted by people who were there multiple times.
I tweeted about it. If you
and
have
I need,
seen
I need
it,
to get there.
I'm a brisket guy, but man, those ribs. The best ribs I've had. Legitimately the best I've ever had. The St. Louis glaze style.
I'm so
excited. Unbelievable. On the exotic side of things, the Rainbow Drive-In in Honolulu, Hawaii. I had a giant.
I've never been to Hawaii.
You should go, Andy. They should. First of all, SEC expansion. Give the Rainbow Warriors a call.
That's right. Bring them in.
Let's do it. Listen.
Come on, Greg Sankey. Get off your butt.
Spirit. They'll get a stadium eventually. It doesn't matter if their stadium is structurally unsound and they have to play all their stuff.
They're fixing it right now.
Yes. Imagine. Anyway, the Rainbow Drive-In in Honolulu, Hawaii. I had some mahi-mahi. In addition to that, it's a mixed plate. I forget what I think they call it, the mixed plate, but you got some mahi-mahi with some really good tartar sauce on there, and then you have some beef on top of the rice, and then there's a little chicken katsu cutlet all in one plate. It's a massive amount of food.
There's a lot going on.
It is so good.
I like that.
It is so good. It was like the second meal I think we had while we were there, and I was asking the people at the hotel, where should we go? And they were kind of giving us a couple suggestions, but I was like, no, where would you guys go if you were going to go eat right now? They're like, oh, we go to Rainbow. I was like, okay, well, all right then. We're going to go there then. A good landing spot, to say the least. So if you're ever in town, you're just driving through, I highly suggest you stop by and pop in there. One of the better meals I have had. My wife less impressed, but that's all right.
This is... Sometimes the mass quantities are not what the ladies are going for.
They also have...
But it is what we are.
They also have a slush float, which is basically like... like the Sonic Slush, but it tastes like Strawberry Fanta. Mm-hmm. And then a scoop of ice cream in there. Very simple. I'm amazed this is not more popular. I was not that into it, but then I ate it, and I was like, I'm into this.
That sounds tremendous.
It was.
Like, especially, is it soft serve?
Yeah, well, no, it's just a big hunk of, like hand
of vanilla ice cream.
Vanilla ice cream. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Very
good.
I'm all for that.
Very
good.
I'll take every bit of that minus the tartar sauce.
Fair enough. Well, thank you guys. We're glad to be back. Football and Grits football season is upon us. Again, we'll be here every Monday. Myself, Andy, and as the feed suggests, Andy Staples and friends. Time to time. So every Monday, check us out. We'll be here talking the SEC. Myself, Andy. Make sure to subscribe. Make sure to have that on whatever platform you use and have it delivered directly to your device. That's it for our East preview. We'll talk West very soon. Talk to you guys again next